Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org.
This month's Dharma theme is impermanence, October, every year. And so that's what I'd like to talk about today. I've been thinking about impermanence a lot because of our class. You know, the Buddha, it's one of Buddha's foundational truths. I think what I'd like to start by saying is that there is no free lunch in Zen. You really have to study and to investigate and to experiment. You really have to practice in order to change your perspective, change your life for the better, and change the life of people around you for the better. It does take work, and it takes this in particular. What I want to stress today is that it takes investigation. We have to really look carefully at things. It's not just handed to us. We have to look carefully at things. And the promise is that if we do look carefully at things, then there is a way that will really help us and the people in our lives. And the Buddha, all the way, you know, at the beginning, he puts, and we can see this, we're reading the roots of Buddhism, that we're reading the original Pali texts, and you can see that he puts a lot of stock in investigation, in studying the way things are, and it both in you and in the world, and looking in a minute and a kind of scientific way at the way things are. So don't just take it on faith. You have to look for yourself deeply and find this. And some of the most famous principles, some of the most foundational principles in Buddhism are not aspirations. It's not like, for instance, love your neighbor and your God. We do have some of those. We have compassion, we have the Bodhisattva ideal, we have loving kindness. But the first thing to do, I'm sorry to say, is not love your neighbor, but to look deeply into these areas of existence, like dukkha, suffering, or unease, like self, yourself, the nature of yourself, like impermanence. These are things that we can all agree are true. Impermanence is true. No self is kind of a proposition that comes in Buddhism. That's something to be tested, a hypothesis. But unease, that we are uneasy sometimes, and impermanence, those are things that I don't have to convince you exist. They are matters that the Buddha asks us to look at. That it's, you know, we have to decide what to do with our time. So he says, investigate these things, and by deeply looking into them, we'll walk down the road to a better and more loving life. And today, what I want to look at is impermanence, this self-evident fact that things change. Yeah, I know, things change all the time. Okay, I got it. Eventually, everything will change. But the Buddha says, turn your attention to it, there's something deeper there. Study this. And I think what he says is that when you study it, you will notice, in a certain way, and I'll get to that, you will notice that things are changier than you think. The Buddha says, notice how everything is in flux, is changing. And the Buddha, I think, becomes aware of this because of his own foundational practice, which is present moment awareness. A little bit like the story this morning. What is the most important time right now? Let's study that. And we do this present moment awareness when we do Zazen. He called it present moment awareness. We call it Zazen. It's roughly the same thing, I think. And you practice that by not thinking about past or future, or about your concerns, but by being unconcerned for a time. Just breathing, just being. And then seeing what comes up. What kind of... if we can just do that, what's revealed? And the Buddha said, this present moment is revealed. He called it your natural habitat that we forget all the time. And I guess it's that led him to study the changing nature of things. I don't know what came first, but that's my guess. And I think the key to understanding the way the Buddha saw impermanence and to studying impermanence deeply is recognizing and feeling and observing the activity of change without you, without your desires, without your hopes involved, without your preferences, clouding the picture, just noticing change. And that's what we do in Zazen. You know, we just see things. We just experience things without judgment, without wanting. So if the bee is going to buzz or not buzz, we don't care. It's fine, either way. And then that bee doesn't have the qualities that we normally give it, like annoying. Things don't lose the stuff that we give things. And that can be, you know, things like good or bad or advantageous or something to be avoided. They lose even their name. So we can see things without being useful to us if we really quiet down. And I think when we do that, we notice just the changes in things, the way things change. Okay, here's a sports metaphor coming up, so beware. So if you're watching, you know, football, soccer, without a rooting interest, sometimes that happens. I try to not watch sports when I don't have a rooting interest, because then you could just watch sports all day long. But when you don't have a rooting interest, you know, when you're watching Oklahoma against, I don't know who, Ohio State, I don't care who wins that game. Oh, you do? Okay. See, you'll have a rooting interest, but I won't. And I'll just see pretty colors moving around. And I'll just see the whole pageantry of the game. You really do see it differently. You can look anywhere you want. Whereas if you have skin in the game, he did this, and oh, then that, and why did they do that? And hooray, and darn. And, you know, you follow the quarterback, and you follow the narrative of the game. But at the same time, the Buddha, if he were alive now, would say, at the same time, there is just this swirl of motion and color going on. When we drop our agenda, when we drop ourselves, when we drop our rooting interest in the world, we can just see this world and feel it as motion, as movement, and feel ourselves as movement too. Feel both inside and outside. Notice the way we work. Notice the way emotions come and go, and thoughts come and go. When we can do that without judgment, we can really notice instead of trying to control what happens, and rather than controlling the narrative. And we have a deep instinct to do that, to control the narrative, to tell the story. So it's something. It takes time to relax to a point where we don't have to tell the story, where we can see it more plainly and see ourselves and the world more plainly. So I think this no-self practice of ours that we do in Zen really allows us to see into impermanence more deeply. And Thich Nhat Hanh thinks so too. In his book, what's the name of his book? What the Buddha taught?
Heart of the
Buddha's Teaching, yeah. He has this nice line. He says, impermanence and no-self are related, deeply related. From the point of view of form, we say no-self. From the point of view of time, we say impermanence. I'll repeat that. From the point of view of form, we say no-self. From the point of view of time, we say impermanence. Red Pine calls, just dealing with form, you okay? Dealing with form, Red Pond says, emptiness can be seen as no-thingness. No-thingness of things. The thingness of things that we normally assign to them. That's about forms. You know, form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. We chant. They start with the first skanda, and for all the rest of the skandhas count too, but for good reason they start with form, because I think form is form is important to us in a way, and recognizable. It's a good one to start with. So things are not as fixed into forms as we think. That's what we learn from manifesting no self. That's what we learn from the doctrine of emptiness, and also kind of feeling that emptiness. And then impermanence happens in time. Things are not so fixed as we think, as we may assume. We are changing more than we imagine. The world is changing more than we normally imagine. We are sort of on another level. We will die and we'll be food for worms. We're impermanent, though we have a tendency to forget that. I think in daily life we have a tendency to forget that we don't notice the changing nature of the world so much, or actually the changing nature of ourselves. But I think that's because we are following along with a plan. We have a plan. We have a plan for today. We have a plan for this hour. We have a plan for our lives. And things go along according to plan. And we notice changes when they don't go along to the plan, when they're not following the plan. And then we try to bend them back to the plan. Or if we have to, we'll bend the plan. And that's the way we live, I think. But we don't have so much of experience of this, as I said before, stepping back from the plan, releasing the plan, and noticing what happens, noticing the changes that happen and how they happen. So if we can drop that for a moment, we can notice the changes that are happening all around us that don't have anything to do with our agenda. And we can notice and appreciate the less fixed aspects of ourselves and the world. And I think when we get comfortable with both no self and impermanence, the sort of fluidity that is involved with both of those, we can move more easily. That takes noticing this impersonal change, and I think honoring it. Children, especially young children, for me, were a really good teacher in this department, because they so often didn't go with the plan. You know, they just have another idea. And so I remember, you know, with this one situation with Lars. I don't even remember where we were going or what, but maybe we were going to school, or did we have to go to shopping so that we could get dinner made? But he just would not go. He would not leave the house. And we had to leave the house. And then he's making a bigger and bigger fuss, and then he's crying. And finally, I just had to stop the plan and collapse. You know, he's in a puddle of tears, and collapse with him. And stop paying attention to my agenda and go with the situation. And stop and change. And forget that appointment altogether. And then attend to what is right here. Again, like the story this morning, maybe. And just hug him, you know, without needing to be anywhere. And then there's no time. Time stops for a little while. And then time reappears. And, okay, are we ready to go now? That is the balance of life, I think. It's because we do have things to do. But being able to drop everything and then pick it up again is so helpful in life, I believe. And we practice this every day, dropping everything and picking it back up. Generally, I think we humans are good at picking up and doing that activity, and not so good at the dropping part. So that's what we've done here, and I think that can lead to a healthy balance in life. So, I think to sum it up, I think we paying attention to impermanence. The no self and impermanence and flow of life without us can give us. I count three things, maybe there are more. The first is range of motion. It allows us to move and not be stuck in our own way of thinking, in our own agenda, in our own plan. But we can change more fluidly. And I think see ourselves and the world as more fluid and changing, and change when we need to along with it. It also gives this attention to impermanence, gives us, I think, an appreciation for a different sort of appreciation of life, of my own life, which is impermanent, of each moment, which is impermanent. The Japanese have this phrase, I'm going to butcher this, Wes, so cover your ears, mono no aware, which is the gentle sadness of seeing of feeling the impermanence of things. It's the classic, is the cherry blossom, festival. Mono means things, and aware means, and the last thing I want to draw your attention to, that I think impermanence, attention to impermanence can help with, is equanimity. Dogen Zenji talks about three minds, and the last mind he talks about to cultivate is a vast mind, which helps us, he says, see the whole without go through our lives while through the changes of life while seeing the whole picture. I'll just read you a little piece that I've read this two or three times before because I like it so much. This vast heart, he calls it the vast heart, does not follow the sounds of spring or try to nest in a spring garden. It doesn't try to just hold on to spring. And it does not darken with the colors of autumn. It sees the changes of the season in one movement and understands them in relation to each other within a view that includes both or all of them. And I think this practice can give us that kind of equanimity, which is based on perspective. That perspective only comes when we can back up from our own lives and notice the way things change. Notice that we ourselves get happy and then sad. Notice that spring comes and then fall comes. And not only notice, but honor that. I think that helps us with this kind of perspective and equanimity about our lives. Yeah. The Buddha said impermanence is useful to study, to learn, to appreciate. And that's one of the things we do in this practice. And I think that with work, it can help us become more flexible, more appreciative, and more settled. And that, I think, helps everybody.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.